Folks, welcome back to another one of these political chats that I have with Dan. This week, the knives are out, and honestly, I'm glad to see it because this is our enemies taking chunks out of each other. So that's all good for us. But before we begin, we have a live event on the 11th of April in Swindon. We're all going to be there. It's going to be a big show, and it's going to be great fun. And then afterwards, if you've got a VIP ticket, we'll be drinking in the bar with you afterwards. So come and join us there. Right. So we talked about the polls last week. And we talked about how YouGov actually are the most credible pollster in the country. And after Farage went to war with them because his polling had been on the downswing, this isn't going to get him the effect that he thinks he's going to get out of it. What it's going to get him is a disconnect between where he actually is and what he actually thinks is happening. So he's going to say, no, I want YouGov to tell me not the truth. I want the low resolution, not factual information about what's happening. And that way I can say, well, I'm still going up in the polls.
One thing I have been wondering, right? So they peaked at about 32% in the polls, and now they're down
About 6 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, and they're down at sort of 28%. And this sort of comes after the online right were disavowed to the point where, you know, basically it was very clear we were not meant to be in this tent at all, and he got rid of us. And then
we were the enemies.
Well, yeah.
And Farage goes to the mainstream media and says, look what I did to the online right.
Yeah. Yes.
We were
trying to be friends, but he had to make his enemies. I don't know why. Anyway, the reason I bring that up is because so he's losing about 4% in the polls there. We know that our reach is about 5% of the British population. I mean, it would be 27% if it was cleanly mapped to our 5%, but I just wonder if there's any sort of connection there.
I don't know. Anyway, as you can see via More in Common here, Reform down 28%. Down by two, Conservatives up by two, Labour down by two, Greens up by two. Mm-hmm. This is about roughly where the polling has been on the averages. So that's probably fairly representative. But again, as we've talked about, not really good for anyone. Mm. But More in Common is not one of the most accurate pollsters in Britain.
Okay.
The next one is Opinium, which again has them down by two at 27%. The Greens at 15%. But again, you can see it's a fairly repeatable pattern.
That's the 27% I'm looking for. That maps cleanly.
That's a very average map. But then you get to the YouGov poll that came out this week. And it's pretty brutal.
Ooh.
Right?
But 23%?
Yeah, we'll get... What happened to the... Don't they have... Samson, why can't I see this map? This poll
thing? Rimlin's got it. There we go.
Right. Give them a moment so they can cut this bit.
So 23. I mean, that's not just bad. That's down 9 on where they had got to a few months back.
It's really bad.
Well, before they got rid of Rupert Lowe, they were on 32%.
But also Labour on 19, Green on 18, Conservative on 17. That's bad for everyone.
If this actually happens in a general election, what a mess that will be. That will be...
That's not just a hung parliament.
It will be either a hung parliament, a minority government of Reform and Conservatives, and maybe, well, a few Northern Ireland parties, there's not many of them, or it's going to be a mishmash of absolutely everybody else.
Labour, Green and Lib Dem. Even though there are some serious cleavages between... things, people like the Lib Dems and the Greens, for example. Like the Lib Dems, Ed Davey came out, I think it was yesterday, actually, and said, actually, I really disagree with the Greens' defence policy. Because, of course, the Lib Dems are not actually communists. They're just virtue-signalling upper-class wankers. Yes. Upper-middle-class wankers, right? They're not communists. They want to make sure that their nice four-bedroom house with its wide garden is kept secure. And so they want the nuclear deterrent. They want the military. Mm. They want border control, frankly, as well.
Well, and the other thing is, if you look at what Keir Starmer did in his tenure as Labour, especially before he hit office, a lot of his energies went into taming brutally his left wing.
Oh, expelling it from the party.
Yes.
In fact, we'll come to that in a bit, actually.
The point I was going to make is if it's that difficult with Labour, how the hell is he going to manage a coalition with Greens if that's the way we end up?
How reasonable is Zach Polanski going to be when he's the deputy PM?
He purged his own left, but the entire Green Party is just the loony left.
And they've come back to haunt him. Yes, and that's something that's happening pretty much all over the place. So anyway, other than reform, that's really terrible. But reform at 23, well, Farage would say, well, this is because of your fudged numbers. But actually, if you look at the question, no. If there was a general election held tomorrow, which party would you vote for? I don't know if this is the regressed information, because they said they were going to start putting out just all of the numbers. Well, that's not... If there was a general election held tomorrow, which party would you vote for in your constituency, which is the secondary question they ask for, and then weight the data and whatnot, all the, you know, arcane magic that they do. This is just the basic question. So I actually, and I had a dig around on this. I couldn't figure out if this was done in the way that Farage doesn't like, or done in the least accurate way.
Well, I think the way that he doesn't like is when it produces a result that makes him look bad.
Yeah. But the point is, this has been very consistent from YouGov. They have had reform on about 22 to 24 for about a month now.
Yeah.
And YouGov were the most accurate pollster in the 2024 election. They most accurately predicted that reform would get 5 seats. So you can complain all you like.
Yes.
But this seems to be what is actually happening.
Well, and to be fair, one of the founders of YouGov is Nadeem Zahawi.
He left a few years ago, but...
Right.
You know, so there's...
Yeah, but I met the other two guys as well, and they're all ideologically aligned, the three of them.
Yeah, of course. But the point is, there's no particular reason to think that YouGov would have it out for Farage, as you said, with Nadeem Zahawi. And also, they have actually the best track record of pollsters in Britain. So, again, you can complain about this, but I'm sorry, Mr. Farage, this is what the numbers show. And when that's mapped out, I mean, that is... 270 seats for reform, 49 for the Conservatives.
What?
There's no coalition there. There's no coalition there. But even then, it's probably not a coalition. I mean, they probably have to go into a coalition with the SNP to form a government.
325 they need. They've got 270. So they're, 55 short. So the Tories don't get you there.
And I don't even know if the Northern Ireland parties get you there either.
I mean, if they do, it will be razor thin.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to need Jeremy Corbyn's or something.
I mean, maybe your party joins the Reform Coalition. I don't know, you know, on the premise of diversifying.
Well, it would have to be... No, actually, it would have to be Lib Dems.
Wait, but even then, like, is that...
How is the former Brexit party going to go into a coalition with the Lib Dems, whose entire thing is rejoin the EU, so that people with big houses can also go and visit their other big house in Tuscany?
Yes, yes. There's no coalition here.
No.
This is just oblivion for British politics.
The closest thing he's got to a right-wing party to work with there is Labour.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah, he'd have to go into a coalition, basically the Labour Party.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, what's her name? We'd get Home Secretary. I'm blanking on it.
What, the current one, Shabana Mahmood?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think most reformers could live with Mabana Shamood as the Home Secretary, because she's well to the right of Nigel Farage.
She appears to have the same opinions on immigration that Zia Yusuf does.
Mm.
They're very, very, very similar on that, actually.
Mm.
Immigration has to be massively reduced and legally controlled. As Keir Starmer has repeatedly said, smash the gangs, which is a slogan that Nigel Farage could agree with. It's a slogan that Ed Davey could agree with. But not Zach Polanski, of course. Anyway, so you can see from the current state of British politics, nobody is winning.
No.
Nobody is winning.
Well, nobody's offering what people want, so it doesn't surprise me massively.
Well, exactly, right? This actually, I'm not terribly surprised by this either. It's just remarkable how everything, like with the economy, like with, you know, the wages of the country, everything is kind of equalizing into this mediocre sludge, right? everything in the world in Britain seems to be equalizing it around nobody getting any of what they want.
I mean, that's quite explicit in, say, for example, pay.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how much you earn, they will tax you down to a disposable income of about 40 grand. And no matter how little you pay, they will benefit you up to a disposable income of about 40 grand.
Yeah.
So the
election, no matter what party you're in, you're having about a fifth of the vote.
Yes.
No matter what you do. It's just really, really interesting how the homogenization of the country has arrived at the worst of all possible worlds. Like, nobody wins. Nobody's benefiting. Nobody is going to get out of this. And there was, I watched a Spectator podcast talking about this. Inside Reform's plan to run Britain. Well, I mean, that seemed very optimistic, doesn't it?
A bit premature at this point.
Judging by the fact that we're purportedly 3 years out from the election, it's been, what, 2.5 years? And they've managed to, you know, equalise with all of the other parties.
Is the first 5 minutes of this, of Reform's plan to run Britain, is the first 5 minutes figure out if you're going to do a coalition with the Lib Dems, the Labour Party or the Greens?
No, but the thing about the thing about the old media is they always are struggling to catch up, right?
Yes.
There's this constant treadmill of things happening, and for some reason they're always very reluctant to project into the future. Mm. And that's fine, because I mean, don't get me wrong, predictions are very often wrong. Mm. I try not to make predictions as well, but just looking at the information we have, would you sit there and go, right, what's your plan for government, Mr. Farage? You'd be like, guys, why are you in this position? You've got a lot of work to do to get to that point.
My question would be, what's your plan for getting speaking engagements?
So what I found really funny about this podcast is they went over the sort of damp ground of politics, where it's like, yeah, there's fresh rain and they're just like churning up the same old, but it did come to a bit of a funny end.
And I think that's a balancing act that even he would struggle to pull off.
So there we go. Just another quiet week in British politics. We have a party that barely existed 2 years ago heading for victory in the local elections. We have potentially a leadership contest coming in the Labour Party and the total collapse of the world economy. So do have a very good weekend, and James and I will see you next week.
Now, that was actually a really interesting statement, right? Mm. A party that barely existed 2 years ago is currently looking to form government, and therefore you'll notice that there's an attitude of Restore can never get anywhere. It's got 3 years. Nigel Farage is ahead in the polls.
Well, you can do it in half that. What was it? Macron's on March.
Yep.
Won the presidency within 18 months of forming as a party.
What was the one in Italy as well?
Yeah, and the Farmers' Party. I mean, it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. All you need is essentially the viral meme of it, right? Mm. But there's a kind of attitude at the moment that, oh, well, Nigel Farage did this in 2 years, and therefore this is now fixed. Can't be challenged. And it's like,
well, that is Reform's argument anyway.
But it's not just Reform's argument. Right. It's the general mainstream view. Because, I mean, when...
Oh, yeah, but mainstream don't know what the hell they're talking about. That's why people watch us instead.
That's true. Yeah. But this is a general mainstream view that they're always looking backwards, right? It's like Africans moving through time, right? You're always looking backwards. You're never looking forwards, according to African philosophers. But that's what the mainstream political pundits are like.
The Zimbabwe, or whatever it is they call their time.
I can't remember.
It's fascinating anyway.
The strange sort of dream time that everything blends into. But that's what mainstream political pundits are like. They don't seem to understand that actually the insurgent party losing this much, I mean, literally like, you know, a third of their vote, 3 years out from the election, means that this is not a done deal, right? There are no safe seats for anyone. There's no guarantee that people are going to be like, oh yeah, Nigel Farage in 3 years' time. And notice how Farage got to where he is, right? He got there by essentially challenging the mainstream consensus from the right and upping them. Right. And he'd always take that step. Well, I guess this is the right for me, but like people watching this will be their right. And always they would say, okay, we're going to do this. And Nigel Farage would take that one step to the right and one up them and say, I'm going to do it. So, okay, that's true. But what happens when someone does that to Nigel? Right.
Well, yeah, because Nigel got to the top of the stairs and the next step was start deporting the rape gang communities. And he was like, no way am I doing that.
Yes.
So he got to the top of the stairs.
Exactly. And now he has to stand there claiming that he is the hardest line thing for the next 3 years. Well, we know that that's actually not a very secure place to be, because, I mean, as we've seen, Shabana Mahmood is actually pretty much exactly spot on where Nigel is. But also, Nigel has made a series of mistakes that we discussed last week that have really soured people on what Reform is constitutionally and what the party is made of. And so actually, he did to the Conservatives what someone is very easily able to now do to him. He said, no, I'm, you know, we're the Brexit party, we're the furthest right party. And Nigel just came along and ate their lunch. well, actually, someone else could just come along and eat Nigel's lunch on exactly that same premise, because he left this big space to his right. He didn't bring the big tent over the entire thing and say, no, you're all coming with me, and I will just select who gets to the top.
And also, as you allude, the mainstream politics, the Tories and the Labour, they've just moved with this as well. So when Nigel demonstrated that things he's advocating for is popular, up pops Shabana Mahmood and says, yeah, okay, I'm good with all of that. And now you've basically got, three parties in a line, which is Reform, Labour and Tories, all basically advocating the same thing. You've got the Lib Dems, who don't advocate anything because that would ruin their brand. They just go to water parks and stuff. You've got the Greens, who are genuinely anti-establishment. They're absolutely mad, but yeah, they are.
Yeah, you've got to give them credit. They're anti-establishment because they literally want the destruction of everything.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, well, that is...
And drugs.
And, yeah, drugs, yes. Infinite migrants, infinite gifts.
So I can understand why young people are persuaded. But all this stuff about, young people are persuaded, this, I mean, Harry gave us an anecdote today on the podcast of a guy he bumped into from university. I mean, as far as Harry is still young, and I suppose he's still in his 20s, so that sort of counts. And this guy was saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to vote for Greens. And the next thing he said is, oh, I found your Twitter account, and I agree with all of it. Right? So... There's not a strong overlap between the Green platform and the Harry Robinson platform.
It's hard to think of anything that is more divergent, actually.
No. Like that's my point. I'm pretty sure what this young man was thinking is, okay, that is anti-system. Yep. I want that. But then he looked at Harry's stuff, which is also clearly anti-system. But
in a way that benefits me.
And he was like, oh, yeah, I also want that. As soon as he finds out there's another anti-system that has all the Harry stuff in it, he's going to be like, yeah, I'll go to that.
Well, that's what I think the problem that they have is. And we've said that Farage has been rather fragile recently. Well, I mean, this poll came out that net favourability of party leaders. And, I mean, obviously, every party leader has a negative favourability in Britain. But as you can see, Keir Starmer, Jeremy Corbyn, Nigel Farage, they're well known and widely disliked by a lot.
I'm surprised Corbyn is as disliked as that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even particularly dislike him. I mean, I wouldn't trust him to run a sandwich stall, but...
Well, that's the thing.
I don't dislike him.
You might not remember in 2019, I think it was, that Corbyn was always the problem on the doorstep, because Corbyn is well known in mainstream British politics for essentially being a terrorist sympathiser.
Right. Well, there's that, yeah.
Our friends in Hamas and Hezbollah bringing the IRA into Parliament after they tried to assassinate Margaret Thatcher. Mm. Things like this. His political career has been one that has been punctuated by over and over and over him saying, but maybe the terrorists have a point. Right? And actually, people aren't big fans of that.
When you put it like that, yeah, I might have to revise my view. I just kind of see him as sort of a harmless old man who's a bit funny.
Sure, but in 2019, he was in charge of the Labour Party.
Well, and he got more votes than Keir Starmer did.
He absolutely did.
Yes.
So, there's a reason that a large percentage of the public don't like him. And it's the same with Farage. Yanis Varoufakis was on BBC Newsnight yesterday saying that Keir Starmer needs to act like the Prime Minister in Love Actually.
Who needs to behave like that?
Keir Starmer needs to behave like the Prime Minister in Love Actually. And all I'm saying is it just reinforces my Love Actually, men behaving badly paradigm of politics. Right? Where this, Greek former finance minister, Marxist philosopher comes out and be like, yeah, but don't we want the good guys in Love Actually? It's like, no, you're getting men behaving badly. Right, that's the alternative for you guys, by the way.
The only thing I remember from that film is the Prime Minister in that said no to agree to joining an American war.
That's exactly why he was being cited.
Right.
Because Keir Starmer has said, or had up until very recently said, no to joining the Iran war. But apparently we are sending ships over there now, so whatever, I don't
know. Yeah, we're not getting involved. We're just sending our tiny handful of ships into the most dangerous waterway in the world while the Americans sit back and say, good luck, lads.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
That's beside the point. The point being, Nigel Farage represents the kind of... bizarro version of Keir Starmer. So you've got the Love Actually, man behaving badly, and the public hate them both.
Yes.
I mean, Keir Starmer, most hated politician. Kemi Badenoch, people aren't that bothered about her.
I'm surprised anyone has an opinion. She's irrelevant.
That's the thing. And that's the same thing with Ed Davey and Zach Polanski, is that most people don't really think about them very much. I think when Zach Polanski has more of a profile, people just hate him more, frankly.
Yeah.
But Rupert Lowe, again, probably in the Zach Polanski camp there, but he's the least hated. And that's not nothing. Anyway, so Nigel Farage was on Talk TV talking to Julie Hartley-Brewer about this, and you can see him basically tone policing Rupert Lowe.
Not responsible language.
You don't think that there's an appeal there? Because it's online, people are applauding and are very much supportive of it.
A lot of those are very new accounts, which is really interesting. So you know, this has been taken online as an opportunity by some to try and disrupt as much as they possibly can. And there is an online community that literally want to fight a war against every Islamic person in this country. I want to fight a war against Islamism and the dangers that that brings. So policy differences have got wider in the last 2 weeks, not narrower.
Okay, so, I mean, there's so many things to address in that. But I mean, yep. I'm just going to pick on one particular bugbear of mine on that. They want to fight a war on every Islamic person in this country. No, not really. We just want to stop subsidising them and shipping them in and paying for them to have free houses. You wanted to bomb them.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because it was Rupert Lowe who was the first out of the gate to say no war with Iran. And that was at first, a very unpopular opinion. All of the sort of, you know, Julia Hartley Brewer types of the world are like, how could you say this?
You know what you're supposed to say in that situation. And Rupert Lowe was the only one who was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Yeah. And Nigel said what he was supposed to say and then realised how unpopular it was. And like all the other restore policies, just immediately nicked it.
And yeah, exactly. Completely U-turn. And the U-turn itself was even quite weak because he was like, well, we just don't have a navy that's capable of doing it. It's like, so if we did have a navy that was capable of doing it, you'd still want to do it. You'd still be on for the Zionist war, basically, is what you're saying. But notice the tone policing there, which I think is really interesting. When you say, well, that's irresponsible language, and I think he's just going too far, I would like to moderate and be mature and responsible. What you're saying is, I concede the moral argument.
Yes.
I concede that Rupert Lowe is secretly and actually in the right here. However, I have extraneous things to bring in. Oh, standards, morals, and all these sort of, okay, that's great if you're in, oh, I don't know, the year 2000, and the country's doing great, the economy's brilliant, we're still 90% or 87% white British, then all of these things you can say, well, I mean, you know, I've got standards, even though if I do concede that that's a morally correct argument. But we don't live in that world.
The problem with Farage is he doesn't know what time it is. He doesn't. I mean, his worldview seems to have got frozen in time when he had the airplane crash. You know, he hasn't really updated his mental model. Back then, if you said to people, you know, we're going to have to do remigrations, we're gonna have to readdress this, we're gonna have to turn off benefits who aren't British citizens, I can believe him that a number of people would have been like, oh, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? You know, we're doing well, we can afford this. Yep. You know, post the, you know, financial crisis, especially lately after the Boris wave, just speak to people. And I do this all the time, and I don't tell them who I am, what I do. Like if I'm in a taxi or meet people at some function, I don't lead it at all. I just let them speak.
You just want to hear them. I get this all the time from taxi
people. People are radical.
And in fact, so this is the point that I wanted to make here. I was watching Matt Goodwin on Peter McCormack's podcast, and he was saying on the doorstep, all he would get is people saying, oh, we need to get control of our country. We need to get control of our country. So, okay, and they didn't elect you because they didn't think you were the guys to do it. And as this commentator that put that clip out says, look, Nigel is clearly frightened. Saw Britain will overtake reform, and I think he's acutely aware of this. Yeah. And that's why he's tone policing. He's trying to put the brakes on. He's trying to say, no, you're not allowed to do this. Like, but why not?
And this is the same problem. So his number one and two targets are the online right and Restore Britain.
Yep.
He had both of them.
Yes.
We had him on our bloody video wall until not so long ago.
Yeah.
He had Rupert Lowe.
You were
in the
his
party.
Candidate.
Yeah, I was his
until
candidate.
Until you got deselected.
Yes. Yeah, for saying that we need to do some remigration.
Yes.
But I got there before he did.
Yes. And that's exactly the thing. Nigel has created this problem for himself in the same way that the Labour Party have created the Green problem for themselves.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, come in. Yeah, no, we're radical social justice warriors. We love all this left-wing thing. That's right. Some women have penises, says Keir Starmer. until they're like, okay, but we're not going to do any of that.
Oh yeah.
And then they all go to the Greens, and now the Greens are overtaking Labour in the polls. And it's just like, sorry, like what?
Yeah.
What are you made your own bed?
Well, it's on the cusp, isn't it? Greens are 1 point away. Oh,
it depends what poll you're looking at. But yeah, they're very, very, very close. Right, very close. Because again, viral memes actually go viral very, very quickly. And the one thing I have learned after my many years talking politics and philosophy on the internet is that what Nigel Farage has got into here is what we could call internet blood sports. This is who is essentially going to out bravado the next person. And so now this isn't really even about a discussion on policy. This is a discussion about essentially moral rectitude, right?
Right.
Who can beat their chest and say, I am the most moral? And it doesn't look like Farage has got it in.
You're saying he's doing the meme of that guy at the computer, and he's like, when you're coming to bed, darling, he's like, I can't, somebody's wrong on the internet. He's in this, is he?
No. It's worse than that.
Is right? it?
Yeah. So internet blood sports was a phenomenon of about sort of 2017, 2018,
right.
Where the liberals, and I was among the liberals, lost the argument to the alt-right. And it blew up into a big thing. But it was also quite mean, because it was all about character attacks. And being able to level character attacks at your enemy. Now, Nigel Farage is wide open for character attacks, not just on himself personally, but on his party as well, as being weak sauce, and weak source, full of Tories, but also full of Muslims. I'm not the one saying you can't have Muslims in your party, but there is a sizable number of his own base that really don't like Islam. Mm. And they love Tommy Robinson, and they thought he was going to be essentially the pro-British candidate. And that's why they're with him, or were with him. And so Nigel Farage coming out and saying, no, I'm not against Islam, I'm against Islamism. It's like, okay, how are you drawing a distinction there, Nigel? What is the difference there? And his own base will make him demand that he answers this.
Well, I mean, he can't even ask her what is an English person.
Well, exactly. A Welsh person is someone who's just lived in Wales for 5 or 10 years.
He's not going to start tackling the theology questions.
No, absolutely not. I mean, as far as Farage's definition is concerned, Axel Rudakabana actually is a Welsh choir boy, right?
Yes.
That's as far as Nigel Farage...
Because he's got the piece of paper.
He was there for 5 or 10 years.
Yep.
So there we go. And so what this means is that Farage is entering into a mode now where he's struck at the online right and Restore Britain, right? They are the fact they exist outside of his big tent is his own fault.
Yeah, he pushed them out.
And he's telling them, no, you're bad people. I'm with the libtards, right? I'm for standards. I'm for decency. And
I'm competing with the Tories, the Labour Party, the Green Party, and the Lib Dem, the SNP, for those votes, as opposed to having this wide open space that was mine to inherit.
That would have venerated me like a god.
Yes.
Right? No, Farage, yeah, it did. And so Farage has entered into this internet blood sports where he's decided, no, I'm just going to attack them, and I assume that I'm higher and mightier than them, and they won't be able to bring me down. It's like, no, that's not going to happen, right? What's going to happen is that, I mean, I've even started seeing like Richard Tice and a few others just turning off the comments on their tweets. Matt Goodwin,
I haven't seen
turning off the comments on their tweets, right? Because they're just, it's constant attacks. Because you've got a swarm of angry people with small accounts, but they're all there, thousands and thousands of them, and they hate you and want you.
Is it like a drone swarm?
Yes,
it's very effective in large numbers.
Exactly, and this will be essentially a grinding down of the morale of the people who are on the other side.
Yes.
Because these guys will just feel, well, we've got nothing to lose, and we have vulnerabilities in you that we can exploit.
Well, maybe that's why they keep doing these bingo halls with these sort of 62-year-old ladies with their blue hair, because they're the only people who like them anymore.
Well, yes, that's basically what I think this has boiled down to. If you've lost the sort of stormtroopers on the ground, you know, the young guys who are angry about the thing, and the, you know, if they're attacking you rather than the system and the establishment, you've messed up. And that's where...
Or you are the system, or you're becoming the establishment.
Exactly. Yeah. You seem exactly the same to them. So, and this is a mistake that I made when I was a liberal, because I was an idiot back then as well. Right? But Farage has not been through this. He's not learned this lesson. And weirdly enough, and here's some deep lore for any internet old heads, right?
Right.
I had a conversation with a guy called Coach Red Pill, Now,
is he the guy who got assassinated?
He's the guy who got assassinated in Ukraine, yeah.
Okay.
Right? But this was long before all that. And he was basically chewing me out and saying, what are you doing fighting with these guys? These should be your stormtroopers. You should be just launching these at the establishment. Mm. And why aren't you? And at the time, because I was a liberal, I was just like, yeah, but they're bad. And it's just like, yeah, but they're just anonymous people who are angry at how things are. Right, the ideological constructs that I'm putting, oh, no, who cares? You know, none of that matters. What matters is that's actually a large body of people who are furious and actually can do something, even if it's just demoralize the other side. Mm. Why aren't we launching them at the people who need to be demoralized, right? And so, and I, don't get me wrong, I was stung by this. I learned my lesson. I'm not a liberal anymore, but that wasn't because of that. That was something else. But the point is, he was actually right about this. He was like, look, these are your guys, whether you like them or not, and you need to be properly directing them at the target. And Farage is doing exactly what I did during this era of internet blood sports, which is try and maintain a moderate position in a time of immoderation and trying to fight the radical fringe yourself rather than just pointing them at the enemy. And so what this means...
That's good.
Farage has stepped on a rake here. He's put his foot into a beehive, and it is going to sting him to death, right? This is not going to go the way.
Well, he's not adapting. You can see it over the last few months. Since the polls started to turn, there's been no... I mean, for a start, I mean, Tony Blair could do this all the time. Tony Blair would face a hostile mob, and he would at least partially diffuse it by accurately describing what they're concerned about, at least as well as they could, so that you could understand that it was within his thinking.
But Farage never talks about demographics.
No, he can't do this at all. All he can do is just, well, basically call it amateurish and a whole series of cheap insults.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Farage is on the hook here, and it's not good. So not only... Reform declining in the polls, not only, as the Spectator tells us, well, it took them 2 years to get to the top of the polls. Well, that means it can be done in 2 years, right? We have a precedent, right? We've got 3 years to the election. It takes 2 years to get to the top of the polls. Thanks for being clear on that. And also, we have the actual radical insurgency that you'll notice when Restore Britain came out, right? Rupert is not nearly as radical as most of his, or a large section of the online right would like him to be.
Because he is credible, though.
He's credible. That's the point. Does he ever attack them? Does he ever disavow them? No, the enemies are that way. The enemies are in government. The enemies are the media. The enemies are over there. These guys are just angry people mouthing off on the internet. Mm. Rupert is not stupid. He knows. Don't go after them.
Well, I've been meaning to find some good media, that, you know, a version of us, but for the Green Party. And the reason I want to do that is because... Look,
that's Navarra Media.
Okay. All right. Fine. Okay. I'll watch some of that then.
Yeah. It's.
I mean, I'm going to have to look at Sharkar's face. Maybe. Okay. I'll do the audio version. Yeah. But my point is that these people are genuinely upset about something.
Yeah.
Their concerns are probably not. They're real.
The concerns for the Greens are economics mostly. Right. Their main argument is the 1% are screwing you, and that's not wrong. I agree with it. Like, I would do a bunch of things about that too. I wouldn't do communism, but there are lots of exploitative practices.
Yes.
I mean, mass immigration is one of those exploitative practices. Mm. To get cheap labour in to literally steal money from your plate.
I mean, Boris Johnson said that. I did the Boris wave in order to stop wages going up.
To make the Financial Times like me again.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that is, you know, they're just useful idiots though. So anyway, to end on this bit. So you can see that Reform aren't doing great,
no.
And they have a large number of enemies to their right. It's one thing,
and the left.
It's one thing, you know, you've got your front lines there, and you're constantly bombarding and being bombarded by the Labour Party. That's fine. That's what you're here to do, right? That's completely. But when you have enemies behind you as well, because you made those enemies behind you, rather than having them on your front lines too, well, then you're in a squeeze, right? You've got a real problem, especially when you're in this kind of internet blood sports where you're taking pot shots at them and they are just constantly nin at you. This is going to go badly for him, right? So things are going badly for Reform on the outside. And things were also going badly for reform on the inside.
Oh, goody gum drops. Tell me more.
Yeah. Now, when a party starts dropping the polls, when they are surrounded by enemies, in the Farage bunker, the knives have come out.
Right.
Someone is responsible for this. And so they've started taking chunks out of each other now as well.
Okay.
And so there's not even unity within the party. And that is just, this is...
So you're saying there's going to be a fall guy?
There are probably going to be a few fall guys.
Okay. I mean, the first would be Matt, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, let's get on to Matt Goodwin. So Matt Goodwin lost the winnable Gorton and Denton by-election because, as he said, people on the doorstep were saying, we need to take back control of our country. And he said, well, best I can do is more of the same, but a slower speed.
Yeah.
And so that didn't get the 54% of Gorton and Denton who didn't vote out to vote for him.
54% didn't vote.
It's 46% turnout.
Damn.
And that would have been mostly the white British as well.
So his message was basically, I'll give you suicide of a nation at the speed limit.
Yeah. That was exactly it. And that's what his book's called, incidentally.
Not the speed limit bit.
No.
He left that bit off.
This has been a really, really brutal education in the past couple of days. And I don't know why Matt's done this and why... Like, what? I don't really understand what he's doing because it seems to be he's self-immolating, actually. So, okay, you lose in Gorton and Denton. Not good. The left are calling you Matt Badloss. Not great. But then you release a book that is very swiftly brought out, it seems. And as you can see by the 2.4-star rating, has not been very well received. The reviews have been brutal. Absolutely brutal, right? We get down to the reviews down here. We've got 62% one star and 34% five star. Now, 34% five star is your audience buying your book and saying, I support this guy.
I doubt they've necessarily even bought the book. You can leave a review on Amazon without
it. They may not have. Well, it does tell you it's a verified purchase. There we go. Yeah, right. So you can see that these are people who can't have bought it. But the fact that there's no in between.
No.
There's actually no in between here. Shows you that this is a very polarizing subject. But the main critique that has been brought out on this is that it's lazy, didactic, and frankly, seems to have been written by ChatGPT.
So Harry read some of it on the podcast today. He did a segment on this. And yeah, the writing is... I mean, I'm a bad writer. I could not write that bad. Yeah. And he's supposed to be a career academic.
Yes. And this is... So they've switched... I mean, so again, just, you know, you've got his supporters, but then you've got this brutal. If
I can guess something, can you go up to the images? Because there was an image with bits highlighted in red, that very first image.
The ChatGPT.
Yep.
Source. Yeah.
I can't quite read it from here, but is that the red bit? Yeah, ChatGPT. It is. Yeah.
It is.
So all of his citations, and there were only about a dozen apparently.
Yep.
He left the ChatGPT bit in when it generated a link for him.
And a lot of the text looks like it's ChatGPT generated.
So another thing I did on the podcast with Harry is I put into ChatGPT, write me the first page of a book called A Suicide of a Nation and then the bylines. And the formatting was so similar. Yeah. I mean, it was the same cadence and everything.
I'm not saying that he did just get ChatGPT to write it.
He probably did, but we don't know definitively.
Well, yeah, yes. But the point is, this has been very poorly received, right? As you can see here, I mean, the New Statesman is just like, well, this is Matt Goodwin's intellectual suicide.
Yeah.
And this is just one example of all of the mainstream media publications just absolutely denouncing it.
And he hasn't got a Vanguard because he's gone after them as well.
Exactly. He hasn't got a Vanguard. He's got his small core of hardcore supporters. But essentially, he's been torching his credibility in real time this quickly after his loss in Gorton and Denton. I mean, if you were going to bring out a book after that, it would have to be a very good book.
Well, he expected to win.
I think
was expecting to sell copies of the book after having his name in the press room.
On the back of that.
Yeah.
And so, yes, very, very strange. Now, Matt has responded to his critics But his critics pointed out that these are not substantive responses. For example, there are multiple quotes that are made up because ChatGPT, like all AI, it does something called hallucinations.
Yeah.
As in, for anyone who doesn't know, AI apps are probability generators.
Mm.
So it's like, what is the most likely thing to come next? And with all probability, there's a percentage chance it'll get something wrong.
Well,
so if you do 300 pages of a book or something, if it gets something wrong, it won't check that. It will just continue saying, okay, what's the next likely thing? What is it likely that Cicero said? Well, he said, it's likely he said this. And if that's not accurate, well, now you're on this trail where it's making up a fake Cicero quote.
Well, and that thing, when you said the Cicero quotes in particular, they do sound more or less like the thing that Cicero might have written, but he didn't.
Yes.
Because it's generating what Cicero might have said.
Yes. And so there are a lot, as you can see, there's lots of substantive criticisms, and people are not impressed with it. I haven't read his book, so I can't comment.
You can just generate it.
I could. And so this, there we go. So then you have Tim Montgomery coming up publicly to attack Matt. Now, Montgomery...
I thought Tim Montgomery flipped hard for reform.
He did. He is the founder of Conservative Home. He writes Unheard. Or he was the founder of Unheard, actually. Now, a freelance broadcaster, podcaster, and Reform Party supporter. And he came out and said, the controversy over Matt Goodwin's book reminds me of the early warning sign that Rachel Reeves' dodgy footnotes provided about her. Reform Party should now fully investigate Mr. Goodwin's book, and if there are repeated examples of the factual error, that he should be removed from the candidates list. We need our future MPs to be trustworthy and credible. Deselect Matt Goodwin.
I wonder, did Tim Montgomery do this purely of his own behest? Because he's quite close with these guys. Did somebody say to them, it wouldn't really hurt if there was somebody who wasn't directly us, but somebody still with a bit of the limelight who could give
Matt
a push while he stood next to this big cliff?
There was a clip, an old tweet of his that someone had posted. I assumed it would be in the replies. But Tim Montgomery has been going after Matt Goodwin for a long time, actually. Before Matt joined Reform, he described him as sulfurous.
Yeah.
And that he finds him untrustworthy and he doesn't like him. So this was... I don't think this is that someone is inside saying go after him. I think Tim has always had an axe to grind with Matt Goodwin. And so it seems that actually it's now... Okay, we've failed on multiple fronts.
Yeah.
You've just failed again, and you're discrediting Reform. Because remember, Matt Goodwin is Reform's sort of court academic, right?
Yeah.
Matt Goodwin's the political academic in Reform.
Mm.
And so the fact that he failed in the Gordon and Denton by-election, that's a blow, but it's not unrecoverable.
Mm.
But now to be like, okay, well, I'm going to stand on my core strength, which is my academic credentials, and produce... what looks to be an AI-generated book with no...
And frankly, if it isn't AI-generated, that's actually worse because it's so badly written.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily worse. I think actually it's worse to have been so lazy about it.
Possibly.
But it's really bad. And so now the knives are coming out in Reform. But, right, okay.
That's a lot of knives at this point.
It is a lot of knives.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, Matt responded to this with, what Reform should do is stop taking Tory wets like you. I've responded.
I just watched the Pete McCormack podcast where he spent an hour defending taking Tory wets.
All you do is criticise Reform in our campaigns. No idea why you're even in Reform unless it is to try and weaken it.
Ooh, is Matt the guy to be making that claim?
I'm just saying. It's like the two monkeys in The Simpsons where everyone's cheering.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I mean, guys. Like... you're all terrible.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Tim goes back. Play the ball, not the man, Matt. It's like, but you were playing the man, not the ball. You began.
I'm seeing your whole point about the blood sports thing here.
Right.
There are a few analogies.
And that's the thing. This is essentially trying to win over a crowd in some way by saying that he's the problem. And that gives him a person to strike back at. And all while this is happening, Reform is still doing the same old ridiculous weakening things that it always has done. You remember Dr. Chris Parry? He's going to be a mayoral candidate. No, it's actually
vaguely. I remember the name.
He's the guy in the Falklands War who dumped depth charges on that famous tweet. One of the absolutely classic tweet. Right. Where someone's like, oh, my grandfather died in the Falklands War because someone dumped charges on him. And Chris Barry's like, that was me.
My God.
I think I've got that right. But
I mean, that is Twitter brutality to a different level. But yeah, brilliant. Okay.
Well, he was going to be the Hampshire mayoral candidate. He's been expelled from the party.
Okay, why was that?
Because you remember the Jewish ambulances that were recently set on fire?
I when you say remember, I learnt about them for the first time a few days ago.
Yeah, I didn't know they had their own ambulances.
Yes, I know about that.
Apparently, the number isn't even public. So they say, oh, we service all communities. Okay, but the number's not public. How do we contact you? But do you remember the Islamists on horseback? There was also...
Oh, yeah.
Right, he compared the two, saying, look, this is an example of communities not integrating.
Okay.
And reformer, like, you're gone. So, right. He's a sensible and credible voice. Dr. Chris Parry, former military veteran.
Yeah.
You want to get rid of him? You're keeping Matt Goodwin. You're keeping Tim Montgomery. You're keeping all the Tories.
Yeah.
And you're getting rid of this guy. So it's like, right, okay. No, you are... I mean, you have said something that is trivial at best, right? The number of people... The number of votes Reform would have lost from any of these communities is trivial. Right? There are 270,000 Jews in the entire country, and Matt Goodwin got 5% of the minority vote. Right?
Yes.
Neither of these groups are your core constituency.
Yeah.
Chris Parry represents your core constituency. He is your core constituency. You've lost however many votes from people who are like, yeah, I want someone... credible and serious, like Dr. Chris Parry, the conqueror of the Argentines, in our government. No, you're like, no, I'm going to court two very small minority groups.
You have to remember, this is just a consistent pattern with Farage. Yes. He drops people, stabs people in the back, eliminates people all the time.
The second they become even slightly inconvenient.
Yes. We really noticed it with Rupert Lowe. But it's just a thing he does on a regular drumbeat basis. And throughout his career, he always has.
Yeah. Is anything that looks inconvenient to me, no, gone, I don't need it. So, okay, yeah. Okay. Well, you're continually salami slicing your own support base.
Yes.
And this is another thing I've noticed a lot of people saying is, well, Farage has been making a big deal about finding candidates at his Reform rallies because he's campaigning as if the election's tomorrow. Right, he's constantly going around doing these rallies because apparently he really likes the campaigning because he gets driven everywhere. He has wine, he has nice dinners and stuff. And then he just goes up and, you know, performs to a large crowd who's just like, yeah.
Mm.
And I've noticed, I was watching one the other day, I think it was the Isle of Wight one, where he's like, there's a stand at the back. Please go sign up if you want to be a candidate to this sea of silver hairs and grey beards. And I was like, okay. Why is Reform having trouble finding candidates? Right. You would think Reform, top of the polls for 250 polls, would be flooded with candidates. You'd be like, oh, no, actually, we need to find a way of sieving through these to find the wheat from the chaff. But no, apparently they're having problems actually getting candidates for various locations. It's like, right, that's interesting. And now you need another mayoral candidate for Hampshire, I guess. Because you keep doing this. You keep thinking that any amount of deviation from whatever Sky News would consider acceptable means they have to be out of the party.
I mean, I suspect it's because... Okay, there was a time, you go back 30-plus years, the people in Parliament were retired generals and, you know, surgeons and businessmen, people who'd really done something.
Like Dr. Chris Parry.
Yes. And yes,
this is a great example.
Yes,
right. He is what we should have populating the Parliament.
Exactly. And Parliament would have been a place where ideas were discussed, and it was the cutting edge of political thought within the country. All of that takes place online these days, and if you are in Parliament, you are basically lobby fodder. You get a pager, mm-hmm. and it says division, aye or nay. And that's what you do. You turn up, you walk into a room, you're checked
shuffle
off
through the doors, or
yep, the lobby yep. doors, and that I mean that and that's it. And then you, but I mean you're basically just your job is to queue up.
But also, no, Nigel Farage has never lost this fragility of, I'm afraid of what the media will say about us.
Yes.
Well, they already call you a far-right Nazi. Like, they already call you every name under the sun. It's like, yeah, but now, again, this reflexive fear. Oh, someone said something. And it's... We had... what was his name? German, Austrian professor on. I can't remember his name.
I might have missed that one.
No. Sorry, I've forgotten your name in the heat at the moment. But he's like, look, the left is... They're dominating credo is basically, what would Hitler do? And they say, what would Hitler do? Oh, we have to do the exact opposite, right?
Yeah, but quite often they get that wrong and do the exact same.
Sure, but it doesn't matter, right? Okay. The point is, their standard for their own behavior is Hitler, right?
Yes.
As in, they're like, oh no, Hitler would make sure we don't have illegal immigrants in the country, therefore we have to be supportive of illegal immigrants, so we're not Hitler.
I mean, that does actually make sense and explain left-wing behavior, but that's a really bad model to operate on.
Yes, it is. But Nigel Farage seems to operate on the sort of, what would the Guardian do, right? But we need to do whatever the Guardian will now write an article complaining about this. Well, then you better get ahead of that, Nigel, and kick him out. So it doesn't matter what the Guardian does. How can you not know this yet?
But how can a politician still think this after watching the first Trump term? Because if the first Trump term taught you anything, it's that you can actually say no to media. You can just say, yeah, that's a load of rubbish, not accepting that. You don't have to constantly pander.
Yeah, but he hasn't worked this out. So the Knives are fully out in Reform. Not only are they tanking their own quality candidates, but the bright stars in Reform are currently stabbing each other in the back. And... literally having little knife fights on Twitter, in addition to all of the other things that are going wrong for the party. So it's a party that no harmony within it. It's losing ground. It's losing purchase. And it looks like, I personally don't think they're going to last out this 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So let's quickly, let's move on to the Labour Party. Now, Jacob Rees-Mogg put this video up saying, look, as you can see, if you think Starmer is bad, Rayner will be worse. And probably true, right? Probably true that Rayner would be worse.
It would be funnier, though.
And Mogg comes to the conclusion that he thinks that there's essentially Rayner's attack on Starmer, saying immigration reform is un-British, as in Shabana Mahmood reducing the number of migrants coming into the country is somehow un-British, which you just think, okay, imagine how bonkers you have to be to think this. As in, immigration was never something that ever happened to Britain up until about 1956, and then it was very, very small and very, very hated until around 1997, where people still hated it. It just got much, much more enlarged.
And in every one of those general elections, the party that won had promised to cut immigration did the opposite.
Exactly, right? So the idea that immigration reform is un-British is a very American perspective, where it's like, we're a land of immigrants. But Mogg thinks this is groundwork for a leadership election that they're going to force, as in an uprising of the soft left. So the sort of Andy Burnham types, the Ed Miliband types, those sorts, are looking at Shabana Mahmood and like the Keir Starmer faction and saying, well, these are a bit hard. And it's like, okay, but the
only reason why Labour is getting any plaudit at all is because of that.
Yeah. Starmer managed essentially to be like, I'm not getting into a war, and we've got immigration down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's genuinely the two solid things that Starmer has actually done. Give him credit on it.
And bear in mind, this is a party that was created in the first place to represent the British working class.
That ship sailed.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Mogg thinks that Rayner is a dangerous proposition, actually, because he thinks that she is charismatic, in touch, and gregarious. Now, I don't share that opinion.
She's got personality. You could believe that she dreams, for example.
Yeah, no,
I believe that she has a favourite book or music track.
Yeah, she's got a favourite episode of EastEnders.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely, I agree. You know, she loves to watch Coronation Street.
She probably has a soul, whereas Keir Starmer
doesn't. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, she's a human being.
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. That's, I mean, what a low bar, setting up politicians. You know, she's a human being made of meat.
Yeah.
She's
that's a surprisingly good picture of her, by the way.
Isn't it? It's not a bad picture of Starmer, to be honest, as well.
No, that's true.
But the point is, there's a lot more to being a politician than that, right?
Oh yeah, but we you know, this is England. We need to get to step one before
human
we can worry
being
about
on the ballot. I don't think that Angela Rayner actually wins over most of the country, right?
But she would get the Labour roots back, perhaps.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
But it depends what she's offering, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, fine. Okay, let's assume that somehow she could do that. Jacob Rees-Mogg thinks that she's left-wing, fed up with the blob, and that people like her. She is Trumpian in this aspect. So he's saying she's got a sort of Trump-like...
bombast or something.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not sure I completely agree with this analysis.
What do you think, then?
I think that Dominic Cummings is right about the Michael Gove position, where... Michael Gove was like, could I be prime minister? He was like, yeah, in this environment. You know? I think it's something similar.
That was a devastating response.
It was, and I think it's something very similar with Angela Rayner.
I don't know. I think if I was Nigel Farage or Kemi Badenoch, Angela Rayner is the one that I would want to see the least.
The thing is, if I were Nigel Farage and Kemi Badenoch, I feel that I'd be able to bamboozle her and outwit her.
Yeah, but nobody watches PMQs, so...
Not just the PMQs. Strategically, right, at the various different levels, you know, she'll come out and do something. Like, surely our team is smarter than her team. Surely I'm a more charismatic speaker than she is, says Nigel.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like... I mean, don't get me wrong, it would be a step up probably from Keir Starmer. Mm. But she's always carrying Keir Starmer's baggage anyway, because she was the Deputy Prime Minister, and she got fired for a tax scandal. So typical Labour...
Whilst the housing minister or something.
Yeah, having a second house or whatever. As the housing minister, typical Labour corruption, typical carrying Keir Starmer's baggage of, I hate Keir Starmer, but you were his deputy PM. And three, I think you can probably outfox her, right? Mm. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't think she's that strong, frankly. And I think
none of them are, to be honest.
Well, exactly. It's just speaking of the really low, mediocre level.
We're looking to the bottom of the barrel here when we're trying to determine the water level.
Yes, it is, exactly, right? But Mogg does make a good point that politics now has become a lot more personality-based. Right? It used to be very party-based.
Well, because there's nothing else there.
There's nothing substantive in the party.
In fact, we got down to nothing but personality, and then we had Keir Starmer, who doesn't even have one of those.
That's right, because Nigel Farage attacked the Conservative Party. And so there's the expectation she's going to bring out a memoir. Now, this is doubtless going to contain a series of attacks on Keir Starmer. And so she's going to write this memoir. She's going to launch her attack of the coup of the soft left against Keir Starmer. And the question is, can Keir Starmer resist it? Now, he's resisted pretty much everything, actually. Because, I mean, you obviously completely excised the Corbyn faction. That's coming back to bite him with the Greens. But at least from a control point of view, he has control of the Labour Party. And so now, is it the sort of soft left that will come after the managerial elites? The radical left have been kicked out. Mm. Now it's the managerial elites versus the soft left. And honestly, I don't know that they can do it. So I was watching this Politics Joe podcast, and this is a chap called Paul Holden talking to Ava Santana. And Paul Holden is a South African investigative journalist and the author of the book called The Fraud, Keir Starmer, Morgan McSweeney and the Crisis of British Democracy. Now, they don't frame it in these ways that I'm about to frame it in, but I think my framing is more accurate. And honestly, I'm going to give AA his props for this, because this is really his framing that I've adopted. But I think he's correct. Now, Paul Holden has been in the British Labour Party for a long time. He's been a Labour activist who's been working. You've never heard of him because he's one of the internal party people, right? But he found himself locked out of this because he was trying to expose Starmer for basically being a liar who believes in nothing. So I already...
Does that take a lot of exposing?
Well, no, but the thing is, prior to Starmer being PM...
Oh, I see.
This wasn't well known, right? Okay. But he was working on the innards of the Labour Party.
I see.
And he clocked him very quickly. He was, oh, right.
He lost the ensuing power battle.
Yes.
Right.
Because remember that Keir Starmer was a strong backer of Jeremy Corbyn when the wind was in Jeremy Corbyn's sails in the Labour Party.
Actually, nobody else in Labour would do it, but he held the line and was therefore in the senior position when the leadership rotated.
Yep. And the second the leadership rotated, out of the party.
Yes.
Merciless bloodbath
yes.
of the Corbynistas in the Labour Party. And so Paul here has come to the conclusion that where Boris is like a liar when he's caught doing something,
yes.
he is at least not someone who is premeditated, right? Whereas Keir Starmer clearly thought this out in advance. I'm gonna support Jeremy, and the second I get the power, he's out, right? And so Starmer is not only himself not a man of personality in an era where politics is based on personalities, but he's also a calculating and premeditated liar who, in Machiavellian fashion, has kind of acting like Joseph Stalin, using...
But isn't he a Fabian?
Starmer is, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's...
But my point is...
That's what they do.
Of course, but like he's very Stalin-esque in that he uses bureaucratic machinations to arrange and load the dice, set the board in his favor, right? So the people who are problems are just locked out through process.
Yes.
Because remember, Starmer, the arch proceduralist,
yes.
has used these procedures to his benefit.
Yes.
And this is what he thinks is a crisis of democracy. Not really a crisis of democracy per se. It's more a crisis in the Labour Party, which they think is democratic. And so what he has concluded is that the managerial elites, and that is Keir Starmer, Morgan McSweeney, and Peter Mandelson, that faction, are completely in control of the Labour Party. It's absolutely locked down, right? To the point where it is impossible for them to get anywhere. So, like, say, 47 minutes in, he points out that Starmer has just destroyed all of his internal enemies in the Labour Party, right? And that's why Rayner and Burnham are on the outside. Remember, it was Starmer who got Rayner to stand down in this thing. She didn't have to. Starmer could have just come out and said, well, it was a slight oversight, but she's repaid the money now. I'm going to carry on as normal.
Yeah, waffle about rules and procedure like he always does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a mistake. This just goes to show how complicated and Byzantine the housing regulations and taxation system is. We're going to overhaul it, so no one is going to fall afoul of this. You could have easily come out and defended it, right? Andy Burnham. Oh, you want Stan and Gorton and Denton, do you? Not on my watch.
Saved his career, though.
Saved his career, yep. right? That's the point. Stalin-esque bureaucratic proceduralism. Starmer has built a fortress inside the Labour Party, controlling the apparatus of it.
Right.
Despite the fact that he himself seems to believe in nothing other than the system. Right. And so how are the soft left going to even invoke a coup? How are they going to do it? Who knows?
Well, they're going to go and join the Green Party and win all their seats.
No idea. But basically, Rayner-Burnham faction are basically on the outside of this. Starmer, McSweeney, and Mandelson are on the inside of this, despite the fact that McSweeney and Mandelson have been disgraced and theoretically kicked out, right?
Oh, so he's not using them as descriptors.
Oh, no, he's naming them specifically.
He literally thinks Mandelson and Sweeney are still key figures.
Yes.
Okay, well that, yes.
And the thing is, in this day and age, there's no reason to think they aren't, because there's doubtless a WhatsApp group. They're still saying, Keir, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't come to 10 Downing Street and advise you, but I can still message
you. Yes.
Right? And so, for example, they have a Google Doc, a spreadsheet, in which they control who can and can't stand as an MP.
Oh.
And Morgan McSweeney and Mandelson, he has witnessed them both updating this spreadsheet. So not only did Mandelson, we knew in 2024 he was... it was publicly reported that he was overseeing the selection process, and Morgan McSweeney, obviously being the chief of staff and the sort of, you know, the vizier of Keir Starmer. But Mandelson has hands on the ability to update and change the spreadsheet. And so the spreadsheet is name, what they've done, and why they should or should not be allowed to stand, basically. And so this is complete executive control of the top of the party, but also the NEC and the actual sort of inner structure. That's all Keir Starmer's guys too. So, frankly, wheedling out Keir Starmer from the Labour Party, it's going to be a very, very difficult job.
Right.
Soft left.
Yeah, I mean, even if you get him out, all of his lice are still in there.
All of his lackeys are still in there, right? And it's because they are the managerial elite that Tony Blair really brought into the Labour Party and took it over with. And the soft left and the far left, people who deserve the traditional constituencies of the Labour Party, which is why like he came so close to kicking out Diane Abbott. It's like, mate,
yes, I remember that.
Diane Abbott is just older than the hills as a Labour MP. Like, you know, there's surely a tradition of having Diane. She's the mother of the house.
Yes.
She's the oldest woman in the house.
Yes.
Like, she's been a Labour MP basically her entire life, and you're going to kick her out? It's like, there's some brutal things going on behind the scenes in Labour at the moment. And so the soft left basically are going to try and instigate a coup, I think, via Angela Rayner's memoirs. But the thing is, essentially what it requires is for them to be able to persuade enough of the backbenchers to join them to overthrow Starmer. But Starmer has control of who gets to be a backbencher. Starmer has control over all the sorts of... He's got the power of patronage in the Labour Party.
Yeah, but as you approach the next election and that power of patronage is going to go away...
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
Right? But the point is, the knives are out in the Labour Party too. Right? There are factions forming and they are clearly going to be gunning for one another. And the thing is, the Starmer McSweeney Mandelson angle... I mean, Mandelson didn't go to jail. He was arrested very briefly and then let go. Yep. It's like, sorry, he's sending market critical secrets to some foreign network.
It is the very definition of insider trading.
It's treason.
Yes, and that.
It is treason.
Yeah. Yes.
And yet Mandelson is still in his home in Wiltshire somewhere, right? And so it's like, right, okay, so he's obviously too powerful to arrest because of his connection to these networks. Morgan McSweeney and Keir Starmer are in these networks. And, you know, Angela Rayner and Andy Burnham, do we think they have got the hard edge required to defeat these guys?
So, to summarise, not just this episode, but the whole series, the centre is collapsing. People are flocking to the anti-establishment options. And what's left in the centre is tearing itself apart.
Yes.
That's quite good.
Oh, yeah. It's good news, isn't it? So anyway, I guess we'll leave that there. Remember, folks, we have live event 11th of April. Do come and see us. It's going to be great fun. And I guess we'll see you in the next episode.